71. It is Tuesday, July the 21st. This is episode 3871 of the Survival Podcast. And we're going to do kind of a variety in news day today. I think that next Tuesday, when we have a Just Jack show, I will dig into a topic, more of a homesteading topic or something like that, or maybe an entrepreneurial one. But I do think that with everything going on and the chaos in the world right now, there's a lot of questions. And most of the feedback that I've got has been about kind of current event things and what do we do about all this insanity. So it just makes sense that I'll do a show like this. It's also the case that just more of you guys show up, more of you guys download the show, more of you guys share the show, more of you guys comment, et cetera, when I do a show like this than when I actually do something that you can just apply to your life. So if that is what you want, that is what you shall get at least for today. The title of today's episode, if you didn't notice already, a look around at the clown show. And Pip and I said I can hear the circus music already in the live stream before we even got started. And I realized something. I haven't actually dropped the circus music for a long time. We are in election year, though. Ask Clown Circus 2026 is beginning to kick off. So it won't happen today because I had no plans for it, but I promise you there will be some Ask Clown Circus inoculation music coming to a Survival Podcast episode soon. And welcome everybody as you guys come into the live stream today. I want to remind you that if you would like to ask a question or have me comment on something, there is a way to not ensure but make it more likely that I'll see your comment or your question, and that is simply to put the word comment or question in all caps before you ask your question or make your point that you want me to comment on. I am a one-eyed man, and I am alone on Just Jack Days, and that means I may not see your comment or your question depending on how fast they come in. But putting that one word question or comment in all caps is a lot more likely to get that to happen. If you're new around here, if you end up liking today's show, please subscribe if you are on YouTube. If you're listening to the podcast from your favorite platform, please consider subscribing there and leaving us comments. That helps us a lot. So what do we got today? Well, first, I'm going to give you some updates about the new AI class coming very, very soon, about the fall workshop, a little bit about Laws of Life Book 2 and things that have are doing really well for us over there. And so that is something that we'll cover today. We're also going to be talking about the fact that Jack was wrong. I think sometimes people don't think that I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong, and that's because I'm a very confident and convinced person on a lot of things, and I generally come to conclusions after taking in a lot of information and vetting things first, and I generally don't run off the mouth about things until I'm sure. Last week, I went out on a limb and said, hey, I have these thoughts about the Darlene Graham appointment. And this week, first show of the day, lead story of the day after we do our updates, I was wrong. And I'll tell you not really why I was wrong, because I think it's pretty obvious. I'm going to tell you what I think actually went on. And that is why I was wrong, because I didn't think they were doing it again. But, you know, I often say that they're doing it again because the last time that they did it, we didn't tar and feather them. So they're doing it again. That's why. And I just didn't think that they were actually doing it this time. And I also will say, to mitigate my wrongness, I presented it last week as if this is what it looks like. And it wasn't. Surprise, surprise. The Ask Clown Circus has a new act for us. And generally, it doesn't work out well when this happens. If you want to think about what's her name, Dingle in the House and Collins and Maine and Murkowski in Alaska, all of them got there a little bit differently than this. But generally speaking, when we hand a woman with a proper last name a seat in government of high office, it doesn't work out well. It doesn't, especially when we do it on the Republican side, which we seem addicted to doing for some reason. It's like, well, we're stupid or something, because, well, we are. Then we're going to talk a little bit about daylight savings time and how it shows exactly the problem that is government. How when government does something wrong, to fix it, they doubled down on what they did instead of putting it back the way it was before they touched it. That should be real obvious if you know the history of daylight savings time. And if you understand that the time you are on right now is not normal time. It is adjusted time. I think every year when we fall back, I hear people screaming, why can't we stick to normal time? Well, you're going to hear why today and why that's not normal time. Stupid farmers, in the words of all people, Homer Simpson. Then we're going to talk about Iran. And we're not going to talk about it from we're winning or they're losing or they're winning or we're losing. But just from the Strait of Hormuz. Who controls the Strait? I'm going to tell you right now, the people that are very angry about the U.S. involvement in the Middle East, I am among them, but I am not among them in this way. They insist to this day Iran controls the Strait of Hormuz. Iran has almost no say at all in how things happen in the Strait of Hormuz, other than they can cause problems. And we'll talk about where maybe that leads next. The United States does not have total control of the Strait of Hormuz, but sometimes we have to look at things from a standpoint of like percentages or how high we've turned up the dimmer switch. Iran's control of the Strait is down on the dimmer switch to a 1. The U.S.'s is probably like a 60 to a 70 for everybody, and it's about 100% as it pertains to what Iran wants. And we're just going to be honest about that, even if we're not pro-war or pro-orange man or anything else. We can actually, it's crazy, but if you will stop being emotionally invested in everything and you'll stop being a purist on your ideology and you'll stop being a tribalist, you can actually entertain a thought without agreeing with it, and then you can come to better conclusions in the words or paraphrased words of Aristotle. That's how back that wisdom, how far back that wisdom goes. Then we're going to talk about the mainstream is finally starting to really talk about the AI bubble. I told you the AI bubble existed a year ago. We're probably quite a ways from it popping, though there are probably some people in the left side of the circus that would prefer that it pop now because they're not in control. And you always want chaos when you're not in control, and you never want to be in control when chaos occurs. That's something you need to understand, except when that chaos is an opportunity for greater power, because under emergency powers, you can advance power, right? That's the way that works. That's Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. We'll talk about that, how that applies to the AI bubble today, and it is coming. And if you are old enough that you remember what it looked like when the dot-com bubble popped, it's probably not going to look all that different this time around. Pain, misery, gnashing of teeth, reconsolidation, and moving forward. But it's going to hurt a lot of people while it goes on. And then the real lessons that we should take from the explosive diarrhea lettuce. Taco Bell is bad. I think you can get explosive diarrhea at Taco Bell, even if you don't have bad lettuce. But there are some lessons here, and they're probably not anything that the government or the media is telling you right now. So we'll talk about that. And we're going to finish up with 6 pillars of liberty that I think you're going to need going forward. And here's the good news and the bad news about them. They're all doable. The bad news, though, is that every single one of them is more like we talked about the Strait and control with like a dimmer switch. And some of them, when you push the variability really high on one of them, the others, by necessity of reality, go down. We'll talk about that today, all 6 of those. And before we do, though, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor today, number one today, is KnifeKits.com. Talk about a sponsor. How about a sponsor that has been with this podcast as a paying sponsor since the year 2010? 16 years. 16 freaking years, guys, that we have had KnifeKits.com as a sponsor. They have gone nowhere. And you guys obviously like them because the total number of complaints I have had about them as a sponsor in 16 years is a big fat goose egg of 0. So clearly you're doing business with them or they wouldn't stick around, and clearly they're doing business the right way or one of you would have bitched about them by now. So check them out. And, you know, you can have a hobby, just learn a new skill, create a family heirloom. There's all kinds of things. I talked to actually Patrick Rohrman about doing a knife making, but a kit knife making workshop at his place in Missouri while we were in Tennessee. I probably need to reconnect with him on that. I found a pretty cool pattern of a Damascus knife in kit form, and I think that could be a pretty fun little workshop up there. I just wonder how much interest there might be in doing something like that. If you would consider going to something like that, a multi-day knife making workshop at Patrick's farm in Missouri, especially if I was there, let me know. Send me an email, TSPC in the subject line, and we will, of course, be sourcing at least some of the material, including the kits, from KnifeKits.com, considering how long they've been a sponsor of the show. Next up today, and I know that this sponsor is actively engaged in our community because he's here right now in the live stream. I'm looking for him so I can put him on the screen. That's right, Anton, the king of Biltong. And we are talking, of course, then about BiltongUSA.com. Biltong, done properly, because good meat deserves better. You can find it at BiltongUSA.com. Honest to God, I love everything that I get from them. I really do. But some of my favorites, and maybe a little less known, are the Biltong sticks. These things to me are like meat peanuts. Now, I'm going to tell you, they're a little bit harder to eat straight out of the bag than the regular Biltong that's been put through the slicer. So with the longer running grain of the meat and then being a little bit drier, that can be a little bit of a chewy situation. All I do is take a little cup, that way I don't eat too much in one sitting, and a pair of shears, good kitchen shears, and I just cut it into little bite-sized morsels until my little cup is full. And then I sit down, and it's like eating meat peanuts. They're that good. Check them out. Also check out the Drew Wars and the Calabanasi sausage as well. Again, Biltong USA from Anton, the king of Biltong. Biltong done properly because meat deserves better. With that, let's kind of jump off into at least the preliminary parts of today's show. Number one, I want to let you guys know that we are going to start the band back up with the AI course. And there's only 100 spots available, but you can sign up for it right now, at least so that you're on the pre-launch list. I cannot remember the exact day, and I have the page that should have the date, Tom, but doesn't have the date of the next round up on the screen right now. You can go to jackslaws.com and just go to courses, and you can select the Become Dangerous with ChatGPT course and pre-register there. If you do that, you may be able to get in on the next round. We have had a pretty good track record of selling out really fast with this course. I believe, I'm going to be guessing here, but I believe the date that this is going to go on sale, or actually, yeah, go on sale, will be August the, as I strain over here, August the 24th, I believe, is the day that it will go on sale. Either way, it doesn't matter if you go pre-register for it. If you're not already pre-registered for it, you'll be able to get an announcement. We take 100 per round. Again, we're on this will be our fifth round this time. We've sold out every time. Check it out again. JacksLaws.com is where you can learn more about that. Next up today, though, as I have to lean way back over here again, Laws of Life Book 2. Guys, every one of you that's picked up a copy, thank you. A few reviews have started to come in on Amazon. That's something else I could use, though. If you've picked up Laws of Life Book 2, now build the system for your life. And well, you know, a bunch of you have, because we've been on some bestsellers lists because of you guys picking it up. Please consider giving me a review. That really helps. I did manage to get all the reviews for the second edition of the first book moved over, even though they took away 20 of them for some unknown reason that Amazon has. But I don't have that many for the new book yet. They are all great, but you can really help me out by leaving me a review. I would just really appreciate it. If my work has mattered to you over the years and you've picked up a copy of the book, please give me a review. I'll just put it to you that way. And then last but not least, I want to just make sure that you guys know we're, you know, on pace for a regular fall workshop. Like always, it'll be here at my farm. Yeah, last year we tried a new venue. We tried to expand the body count allowable and do some things a little bit differently. It didn't work out. And we decided after that it blowing up in our face was the best thing that could have happened. And Dorothy and I decided we're just going to continue to do it right here on our farm and deal with the problems that we have. You know, we're pretty good at them after 13 years of doing it now, of getting through them. And so we will be running a fall workshop. The dates will be November 11, which is Veterans Day, through November 25. And it'll be just like always. The 11th is actually a Wednesday this year. That's kind of show up and set up day. Some people don't come that day. They show up Thursday morning, which will be the 12th. That'll be fine if that's what you want to do. And if you want to camp, you have the ability to camp on our property or get a hotel or get an Airbnb. And a lot of people get kind of team up and do that because all you're doing is sleeping there. It works out really good when one person is a non-drinker by choice all the time. And then that person can drive all the trunks home each night. But I'll just tell you that we don't get involved when it comes to how you go to and fro off site. That's something that students do themselves through the private Telegram group and things like that. But my other thing with bringing up the workshop, I am now open to applications to be a presenter. If you want to present at the workshop, you can email me, jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com, TSPC workshop in the subject line to make sure that I find your email. Give me the title of your talk and then tell me what you'll teach. And be compelling and do it in a paragraph or less. This is just kind of your first take at it, like where I can look at it and say if that's something I'm interested in. And then be prepared to give me more information and prove that you can do a good job before I say yes all the way. November 11th to 15th, that's what I said. November 11th through the 15th, 2026. I included the date there. All right. Anyway, that's somebody talking to me in the live chat there. But I am taking pitches for presenters. I will tell you that I generally give spots to expert council members that want to present first because of the work that they do. And if you do get selected, though, here's what you get. You get a discount on your ticket, and you get a guaranteed seat, so you don't have to get up at 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning, depending on what time zone you're in, and try to get a seat. And maybe not, because if you agree to present and I say yes, well, you have to be here. I don't comp seats for presenters because we sell out in 5 to 10 minutes every year. So that just wouldn't be a good financial choice to do so. But that does give you a guaranteed seat, like I said, and a discount. Now let's start talking about kind of the stories of the day. I know that we took longer to get into, but that's because we had some housekeeping to do today. I just want to say that, again, people often think that I am not willing to admit to being wrong because I speak with conviction. It doesn't mean that I don't admit when I'm wrong. And I got it completely wrong last week in that I said I didn't think Darlene Graham was actually going to run for the Senate seat. And then I explained why, if that was the case, then she was a great pick. And I won't rehash that because I was wrong. She is going to run. But here's where I think this came from. I think this was always the plan, and we were lied to. Again, shocking, I know. Dun, 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 right? To mount a statewide campaign this quickly, because everybody's looking at November, but the campaign starts basically now. The filing deadline is open today, and I think it closes on the 27th, so it's like a 7-day window. Where people that are running have to declare that they're running. And then you get like 2 weeks before this special election. I think it's on August 11th in South Carolina. Now, what that means, special elections, when they're condensed that quickly, are generally not well attended by voters, right? The response rate is very low. It is generally right out of the gate a party insider election, not because only party insiders can vote, but because regular people have jobs and don't generally set aside time to vote in the middle of August, especially in South Carolina where it's 1,000 degrees out. So you don't have long lines at the polls. You have a result fairly quickly. And so even if you give the facade of a special primary, it's still pretty much a selection by party insiders. Darlene Graham's polling numbers were dog shit before what just happened, and I'll tell you what just happened in a second. But her poll numbers were about 6%. If you go to Polymarket now, her odds of being the nominee are 65%. So 6% in the polls, And Polymarket was pretty much the same until Monday when Darlene went on. It was either Sunday or Monday. She went on the Sean Hannity show and said, she's in, I'm in. And then 6%, 65% like that. Why? Because Orange Man. Because Orange Man said she 100% has this full endorsement. This is interesting to me because there has been other primaries that were highly contentious that he's like, you know, I like them all, right? Or he's kind of stayed out until things were more clear, and then he, you know, picked the winning horse that was likely to win anyway, or gave the horse that was running really strong in kind of the second place position the little lift to get over at the end. Something like, I don't know if it was really a lift at the end because I think it was going to come out this anyway, but the Republican establishment in Texas, even the establishment, was pretty much sick of John Cornyn. And John Cornyn is very Lindsey Graham-esque in the GOP. And Paxton, who was the attorney general, had some legal problems in the background and what have you, was really running a good race. But when Trump, like, kind of stuck his finger up and got the wind and said, Paxton's the horse, like, that was the end of that. That was a foregone conclusion that he was going to win the primary in the special election. Picking somebody with the name with the horsepower, last name horsepower of Graham, and going full on from the beginning almost now guarantees her this seat. And this is exactly what people were upset about. And I said, chill until we find out if it is what you say it is. And now it is. And this is another Lisa Murkowski. This is another Susan Collins. Now, neither of them were directly handed the seat, but they were both like the Collins political machine in Maine is decades older than Collins's reign as a senator. And of course, Murkowski basically just stepped into her father's seat. And I don't know why Republicans continue to do this stupid shit, because it doesn't work out. If you want to talk about who the most milquetoast pseudo-conservatives in the GOP are, it's Susan Collins in Maine and Lisa Murkowski in Alaska. Whenever the Republicans are actually trying to do something that actually might be useful and break the dichotomy even 2%, it is always these two mealy-mouthed little twats. They're like, no, I don't want to do that. When there is a vote for an actual conservative on the court, I'm gonna vote no. I mean, just over and over. And then, you know, on the Democrat side, you got what's her name, Debbie Dingleberry out there in the Midwest somewhere. That's been a disaster, even for them. This is just not a good idea. It is not a good idea to have people basically coronated and inheriting senatorial seats. And, you know, this is one of the things that led to the downfall of Rome, by the way. Roman senators were very wealthy people, and it got to the point where senators were just basically by a birthright, like royalty, versus the way the original republic was put together. And the more you move toward that, the more you move toward a modern version of you know, ancient tyranny that's repeated itself many times. And that's not, oh, you know, Darlene Graham is a tyrant. It's the system itself being retarded is what it is. And I'm sorry if you don't like that, but it's what's going on. And so I think what happened was there was a whole apparatus put in motion to make sure that it was like, oh, I don't really want this. I just want to do what my brother loved, and I want to do an honor to his name. And, oh, my God, you guys want me? Wow. Yeah. I think basically they took the ring of power, the one ring to rule them all, except there's a lot. There's 535 rings of power in our Congress. And they just kind of dangled it in front of her, and they showed her around and said, hey, look what you would have. And you could make a real difference, and you could honor your brother even more. And they said, we'll take care of everything. All you got to do is show up and read the teleprompter. And that is what's going to happen. And it's par for the course. Why didn't I see it? Maybe because I wanted, and this is always a mistake, I wanted to think that just for once, we would actually let the process unfold unaltered. I wanted to believe that. And I think it's not because I have great hope. I think it's because, and you're going to hear this today in the overall show, there's so much bad. It would be nice for there to be a sliver of decency in the system, but there's not. There isn't. And so exactly what this became was a queen maker moment by not really the South Carolina governor, because he's a little bitch on a string. Orange man is pulling the string, and the string's wrapped around the balls. Now, why would Trump do this? Why her of all people? Because I think he is a very egotistical person, and I think that he believes that when he does a solid for somebody, that he has control. And then he also believes, well, she's kind of this mousy little female that I can dominate. And we'll just constantly use the line, do what Lindsay would have done, which will probably work this year until she's elected. And then at that point, every person has ego. And every person starts to think, but I should do what I think is right. And the problem with the Darlene Graham is Darlene Graham spent her entire life as a bureaucrat. That's what she did. She has no political experience whatsoever, which could be good, except it's not, because all of her experience is basically spending taxpayer money. That's what her entire experience is solving problems, in her mind anyway, by spending the taxpayers' money. And that is the definition of generosity in the mind of government officials, but especially people that are more left-leaning. And here's a fundamental reality, and many of you are going to be angry with me, but you cannot. The reason you'll be angry is because it's true. And again, remember the bell curve, right? And when you're out on the 1% ledge and telling me, but what about this one? I'm ignoring you. And that fundamental reality is women are more liberal than men, period. Women are more emotional than men, period. I don't care if you don't like it. I don't care how much you fight it. And I don't care if you – I'm not, right? Okay, well, first of all, you're being emotional when I told you that there are outliers. So that just actually – you're actually proving it by being emotional, ladies, when you get like that, right? If you feel the need to even say, but not me, well, you're still being emotional. Because we already – if we say like – 80%, that's 20% that aren't. It's pretty much inferred at that point that it's not everybody. But in general, women are more liberal than men. Even women that call them conservatives are more likely to be swayed by emotion. It generally takes the emotion that breaks it for men is anger. You can really move men with anger, especially if you can make them feel like the anger is righteous, right? But sob story shit works on women better than men. It just does. But what about poor little Johnny? If we get rid of this program, he'll starve. Just more likely to move a woman than a man. Doesn't mean it moves all the women, more likely. And then you add in political power, and the person is already a bureaucrat. You're getting another Collins or Murkowski, likely worse. And senators stick around way too long, way too long. They have 6-year terms, and 6 years is a lot of time to build a coalition of power and a war chest of money and ingrain yourself and ingratiate yourself into the system. It is much more difficult to get rid of a senator than it is to get rid of a congressional representative. And I mean, we've done it a little bit recently, like with Cornyn, but that shows you the power of that machine. It took a sitting state attorney general with the full backing of his governor and lieutenant governor to get rid of one of the most despised GOP senators by Republican voters in the state of Texas. That's what it took. And it wasn't easy. And it also took the orange man dogpiling on top of it and dropping the orange elbow like he was still, you know, fronting for the WWF or some shit, right? Or WWE or whatever they call it now. I'm an 80s kid. It will always be Macho Man, Hulk Hogan, and WWF for me, all right? I don't care what happened after that. I grew up. Some of y'all should, too. Anyway, Let's move on. Something else. Daylight savings time. And I want to cover this more, not so like you'll, because I think it's going to get shut down. There are several senators that are like, yeah, you know, we got an election coming up. And right about the time of the election was when people are going to realize what we've done. And they're going to be pissed. And they're already calling my, you know, like our volunteer pages and shit, and they're not happy. Tom Cotton in Arkansas is one of the senators that's like, whoa, time out on this idea. Of course, since Trump wants it, that pretty much lines up the Democrats to be against it. This could be a bill to declare that oxygen is good for you, and Democrats would find a reason to oppose it. So you pluck off just a few GOP senators, and it's dead in the water. And it sounds like this thing's going to get killed, which I have to say, for once, good. Good. We need that to happen. And, of course, the reasoning as to why this is a bad idea, for instance, is here where I live, that when we get in the kind of the middle of the longest days of winter, the sun will rise for me if we do that around 8:30 to 8:40 in the morning. No. That doesn't make any sense. And the justification is people don't like changing their clocks. So let's do a little bit of that thing we call critical thinking. How do we get in this mess? How do we end up where we have to change clocks? Well, it was either 1916 or 1918 or 1918, somewhere in that 19-teens range. The government decided that we needed longer days, as though that was a thing, for farmers. Now, this doesn't make a lot of sense even then. Let me explain to you why. A farmer of the time was much more entrepreneurial than a farmer of the time today. We had a lot less corporate farms in the 19-teens. So that meant that that farmer was free to get out of bed at any time he wanted and work any hours that he wanted. And to run his business, if he had hired hands and stuff, any way that he wanted it, and say, hey, we're going to get up at this time because that's when the sun comes up and we can see. The other justification for it, if you look backwards, nobody was saying this back then, but, you know, we didn't have artificial lighting. So, and we weren't running, you know, giant combines with big, giant freaking floodlights on the roof and stuff that are mostly autonomous. Like, we don't need that anymore to do the work of farming. And again, the smaller farms, even today, are largely independent, and so if they just think they need an earlier start, they're free to do it. They don't need you to change the time. The other thing is you can't change time. You can change the time that everybody agrees on as to what number it is, but you can't change time. You don't get, like, think about the fact that we want longer days. You don't get a longer day by changing the time. You get the exact, on any given date, you get the exact same amount of daylight and darkness. There is no, you can't, what the fuck do they think these people think they're doing? They see, that ego goes to their head so much, right? But they have at least diagnosed the problem. People don't like having to change their clocks every year. Twice. They don't like it, right? And see, Letty has it because Letty is common sense and oriented, she says. Standard time, comma, please. Well, this is where I'm going, Letty. So why do we have the problem? We have the problem because the government changed the way by which we track time. They didn't change the time. They changed the way we track time. You can't change time. It's an asinine statement that only a government official or somebody fully propagandized would state. So we have to change time because you assholes fucked with it. All you had to do was nothing and we wouldn't have this problem. So when they realize we created a problem, there's really two options here. Usually, well, actually there's three. One is to do nothing, but that doesn't address the problem. If you actually want to address this problem, there's only two possible decisions. This is a binary choice if you want to address the problem that they created. And those two options are: you go to standard time and stop changing it, or you go to what they call daylight savings time, which is a nonsensical made-up government term, and you keep it permanent. And either way, you keep one of them permanent. That's really the only way to fix the problem, which is People don't want to have to change time. Now, I want to be clear, too. People are not upset that they have to take a couple seconds and change time on the clock on the wall. Most of the ways that we keep time today are on our computers, on our phones, on our tablets, and on our cable TV boxes, right? Very few people actually really rely on time that they keep on a like a clock we all had in the 80s, right? Or the alarm clock on the edge of the bed, right? Everybody had, if you were an 80s kid, I bet you next to your bed, when you got old enough to wake yourself up, you had a little brown clock. And if you're on the video, my hands will show about the size of it. And it sat there, and when it went off, it sounded exactly like this. You know exactly the one I'm talking about, right? Very few people really rely on those much anymore. Maybe you have one device in your home like that, or your microwave that you have to change. And even a lot of that shit is getting very automated, right? What I'm saying is the primary means that you keep track of time with, your phone, your computer, your tablet, it changes itself. You don't even have to touch it. It just automatically updates itself. So people are not mad about having once a year to change the time in the, I get maybe your car, and some of the car stereos are still such a pain in the ass, they're really hard to do, right? So you end up like, just I'm done with this thing, and you go out at noon and you just like disconnect the battery for 10 seconds at noon, and it rolls over to 12 o'clock, right? Maybe that person's mad. No, people aren't mad because you're disrupting their lives. You're fucking with their circadian rhythms. We adapt as the daylight changes in its cyclical nature, because we live in a planet on a tilt, on an elliptical orbit, right? We have a natural changing of how much day and night we have in every area of the country, and we adapt to it. And because it happens a little bit every day, all the way to the shortest day, and then all the way to the longest day, that's a natural state for a being that is native to planet Earth. We adapt to it with pretty seamlessly, honestly, because it happens slowly. What people don't like is also we have an abrupt change because some bureaucrat decided that they were smarter than Mother Nature, and that they were smarter than biology, and they were smarter than the universe, and they were smarter than the solar system, and they were smarter than freaking God. That's why people get upset. So who caused the problem? Government. How did the government cause the problem? They changed how we track time to try to manipulate us psychologically using the clock as a control mechanism and changing our reality. Now, we're upset. What would, if you didn't really dig into this, you didn't have any emotion, what would be the obvious answer? Put it back the way that it was before you touched it. Why won't the government do that? Well, because people want longer days. That's not why. We all know that's not why. We already figured that out, right? To put it back the way that it was would be to admit they screwed it up in the first place. That their idea wasn't just wrong, but completely wrong on every level. That's why. See, if you move it permanently to daylight savings time, then the government says basically we had the right idea. Society just wasn't ready for it yet. Now we, the government, have made everything better. Yeah, by having half the country not have the sunrise till after 8 a.m. That's great. Good guys, you fixed it all. Put it back the way that was. Government never puts things back the way that it was. And this would be the easiest example for that to ever happen. There has never been something that government could reverse so quickly, so easily. It requires a single piece of paper, right? That's all that it needs. The whole bill could be one piece of paper. It probably would fit like, you know, about one third of a piece of paper would actually be enough to do this. It's a single sentence. From now on, you know, from the belief or, you know, the purview of the federal government, the 24-hour time will return to standard time and remain that way. The end. That's it. That's all it needs. And I'm going to tell you what I think will happen if by some way they manage to get this done. There's going to be a lot more Arizonas in the world. And I think there's a lot of people that don't really realize this. Arizona does not have daylight savings time. They just don't. They just don't do it. You're like, what? They just don't do it. You know how, like, when you get on an airplane and let's say you fly from Dallas to Denver, when you get there, you know, the time is an hour earlier than it is where you left, and you have to adjust the time zone. When you deal with Arizona, you just have to adjust the time zone to what they say it is all the time. Because I'm going to tell you right now, the state of Texas is not going to tolerate this. And then don't think state governments are any less retarded. Like what Arizona did was they actually did the right thing. We're just going to stick with standard time. Piss off, we don't care. I bet you a lot of states were like, we're still doing daylight savings time. And here's the thing, the federal government can't do anything to stop it. So since it will cause chaos, it's like a chaos goblin being released. Even though it looks like it's going to die right now, sooner or later, these idiots will probably do this. And again, it's all because if they were just to put it back the way that it was, it would be a straight up admission that government got it wrong. And it would also set a precedent that we actually can have a temporary government program. We actually can have one. And then other people might be like, why don't we put some other things back the way that it was? This is an example of people in Washington are completely disconnected from reality. They live in this bubble, and they don't understand that we don't live in the bubble with them. Now, they might look down on us, but when it comes to like their motivations and what they want and how they feel, they really think we are all in it together. We are not. We do not all have a staff seeing to everything that we need all the time. We don't have that. We don't all have a place where we work where there's a gymnasium in the basement and a gas station in our parking garage on the way out. And people pay for all of our travel. And so we just like that it's light outside more often because we wake up whenever we do. And that's when our assistant wakes us up. We don't live in that world, politicians. And the only right move here really would be to put it back the way that was. The other option is to do nothing. And that's probably what's going to happen. And our government's really good at doing nothing except when it's to their advantage to do something. And this really doesn't help them that much. This is nothing but an orange man idea. And here's another thing about Trump. He's very egotistical. I know you guys know that, but I don't think you guys understand sometimes how it affects the things he does. This is why they call these investment accounts for young people Trump accounts. He wants his name on shit. He wants to be associated with things that are timeless. He's worried about his legacy, and he's not worried about being called a warmonger or anything. He wants to put things in place that when people teach history in 20, 25 years in school, they're going to have to say Donald Trump. That's what he wants. So after he's gone, he wants his name coming up in the curriculum in schools. All right, moving on. Iran controls the Strait of Hormuz. I've heard so many libertarians saying this, and this is why I have completely distanced myself from even the word libertarian at this point. You guys have fucking ruined the word libertarian. You really have. And don't tell me about little L's and big L's and shit. No, the LP, the big L libertarians, the purist libertarians and the woke libertarians have ruined the word. Libertarians today in the modern sense are adult children with no grasp on reality. And this is why when we end up in a situation like we're in that requires tremendous nuance and understanding and information to look at this geopolitical mess. Well, if Trump didn't, that doesn't matter. We're analyzing what is, not what should be, okay? Right? It's so freaking stupid. So they say stupid shit like Iran controls the state, and if you don't think that, you're an idiot. Well, what does control mean? I mean, this is not about cheering on one side or the other. What does the word control mean? If I control my home, I decide who comes in and goes out, right? I decide what the rules are in my house. Well, my grandchildren are here. They say, well, mommy and daddy let us do that at our house. And I say, tough shit. My house, my rules. That's control, right? I control my home. Likely you do as well, or you need to put your pants on a little bit better, I guess. And so, because your children should not be controlling your home, Right? And some of you are letting your kids control your health. Don't do that. But control means control. So right now, if Iran wants to send a ship out of the strait to do Iran's business somewhere else in the world, if a ship, even if it's an Indian ship or a Chinese ship, leaves an Iranian port, guess what? It doesn't fucking get to leave. So with that, they do not control the strait. Right? It doesn't matter what I want to be the case one way or the other. It's irrelevant to that specific fact. They do not control the strait. Well, the United States doesn't control the strait either because Iran shot one of the tankers and it's stuck in the water and a person died. Okay, yes. Okay, so Iran is the chaos goblin in all this, right? Iran's threat to the world for 50-plus years has been, if you do anything, we will shut the strait. We will control the strait. They say they control the strait. They do not control the strait. If you can't fucking get your own boat through the hole, you don't control the hole, period. Now, does the U.S. control it? Yes and no. See, this is not one of these binary answers, Pepsi and Coke, gold or silver, blah, 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 blah. Quit being a binary person, right? I guess other than the traditional, like male and female, we need more of that, I guess, in the world. But you know what I'm saying? Don't be a binary-minded person. You should always, when anybody presents you with two options, say, is there a third, a fourth, a fifth, or a sixth? Or is there a degree factor in this? And this is more of the dimmer switch on the wall. Now, a 10 would be the United States, within the physical limits of the size of the strait itself, is able to allow passage of friend and prohibit passage of foe 100% of the time, all the time through the strait, at maximum capacity of the waterway itself. And the only reason it's not at maximum capacity, there's just not that many ships. That would be total control. And what's going on right now is probably 50 to 60% of traffic typically going through the strait is getting through the strait. So you could say that the U.S. has 50 to 60% control and Iran has zero, or maybe you call it 5% because they occasionally cause a problem. I would actually say, though, the U.S. probably has closer to like 75% of what the word control means, and Iran has basically zero. They've been effectively neutered. Yes, they might hit a base in Kuwait or Qatar or something. Yes, they might occasionally hit a cargo ship. That does not equal control. And it only equals control in the fantasy brains of adult child libertarians and leftist retards. I'm sorry. And the idea that the U.S. has total control in the strait only exists in the minds of right-wing Trump-tard retards who can't think for themselves. If you look at the situation, you can say the U.S. has effective control of the strait, but it is highly limited in its ability to move traffic through the strait at what would be a reasonable average for the way things normally are. So Iran is effectively clamping or interfering with the ability of not just the United States, but the rest of the region to use an international waterway. So they are exerting some level of interference and thereby some small amount of control, but they don't control it. To say you control your car, right? If you have a self-driving vehicle that somebody hacks and says when you can get in it, but when you get in it, it's just going to stay at your house. Or you can tell it where you want to go and it will drive like one quarter of the way there and turn around and go home. And there's nothing you can do to stop it. But I control my car. You sound like an idiot. That's what Iran sounds like right now with the freaking strait. You don't control anything. You're not winning. Now, can they still win? Depends on how you mean the word. Defeat the United States military in combat? Absolutely effing not. And anybody that tells you otherwise is so stupid, you should never let a single word that comes out of their mouth go into your ear ever again. You need to become deaf to that human being because that person is too stupid to listen to. I'm sorry. They are. Can they win the conflict? If they can hold out long enough, and that's their advantage. That's all they have to do is hold out. However, I think the pressure is getting really, really, really rough. Some of the things I said that if I was going to do this, it wouldn't happen. We would have never done this shit. Okay. But I've always said, if you're going to do it, then do it right. Here's some of the things I said I would do. One of the things I would do is I wouldn't blow up every power plant they have, but key strategic power infrastructure, Yeah, you hit that. You absolutely hit it. Key transportation bridges. Yeah, you blow, because we can do it. So if you really want to, if you really want to do it, you do it. You put an end to their ability to move people and things, and an end to their ability to communicate. So you take out communications infrastructure, transportation infrastructure, and energy infrastructure. And you can say, it's a war crime. Shut your stupid ass, ignorant of history mouth. It's not a war crime. It's how every war has ever been prosecuted when it's actually been a war instead of some bullshit designed to distract you. What do you think we did in World War II? What do you think we did in World War II? What do you think the Germans did to England in World War II? What do you think the Japanese tried to do in World War II to China? What do you think we did to the Japanese? Are you stupid? It's a war crime. Why? Because your freaking poli-sci professor told you that? Because somebody with blue hair told you that on the internet with giant dumb retard glasses? It's a war. A war crime would be lining up a bunch of children and women against a wall and gunning them all down. That would be a war crime. Blowing up infrastructure of your enemy? That's war. That's war. Right? And we do it too. There was some attack on a water facility recently by the Iranians, and we're like, that's a war crime. So it's a war crime if they do it, right? And as I said, the right is just as dumb. No, you take it out. But here's the other thing I said. A whole shitload of what they need to exist, not just oil, right? Like, Iran does not have a highly self-sufficient country from a production standpoint, from a material standpoint. They have to import a shitload of things. Most of their country is a desert. A rocky, barren, mountain desert. So growing food, producing things, they're not good at any of this. And their biggest trading partners are Russia, India, and China. And all the shit that they get from them can come in on a train. And I said a few months ago, train tracks don't move. And trains can't exist without tracks. Start blowing up some railroad tracks and start blowing up some railroad bridges. We did that this week. It's last week. Blew the shit out of it. There is nothing going into Iran on rail right now. Nothing. Well, then we build it. Well, good luck with that. You're not exactly in a great state to rebuild it. And we have these things called satellites that can be like, hey, they're rebuilding that. Blow it up again. And there's nothing that stops us from doing that. That's the pinch that's going on right now. I also think there is a chance. I am not advocating this, and if you write me and start telling me why I'm wrong, because as though I'm saying we should do this, I will delete your email and your name will be dead to me forever. I cannot be more clear. I'm not advocating anything. I'm telling you what seems to me like is about to happen. I think we're about to have some limited ground action in Iran, specifically the coast, and specifically the areas of the coast that are most used for attacking shipping, so that we can say the Straits open for real and actually control it. Will it work? I don't know. I don't know. I'm less concerned that it won't work, as in, can we send in like Marine Expeditionary Forces, et cetera, if we know where shit is, and have them just take out the shit we can't actually bomb? There's no doubt about we can do that. However, what happens next is now you have Iran with tremendous artillery capability in the form of actual artillery, drones, rockets, missiles. And you have our people now occupying their land, and they have the high ground for attack. And there's only so much you can knock down. And there's a cost to knocking things down. You know, could they take Karg Island? Yeah, but then the Iranians can just hit them on Karg Island. I don't know. I don't know how exactly this is going to work. But if I was going to do this, they wouldn't have any ability to do anything by now. I mean, really, like, will they have more rockets? And yeah, okay. I'm telling you right now, if we actually just took the gloves off and are like, we are going to make this not a thing anymore. I'm not saying you might not still have an occasional idiot popping off a missile somewhere, or somebody in a suicide vest, or, you know, something like the Houthis in Yemen. But this force on force shit would be over like that if we actually just wanted to make it over. What we're doing, I don't know. I don't know what we're doing. It's like we're sitting around with our thumb up our ass and the other hand tied behind our neck at the same time and going, we're fighting, And even with that, we're able to do amazing things because of our technology and our lethality of our military. But what we're doing is prolonging something that the last thing it needs to be is prolonged. And I cannot give you a good reason why. And I feel the same way about Russia and Ukraine. But I can give you a reason for that. I think the Russians have used what you don't think is restraint, but it's definitely restraint because they do not want to do anything that actually emboldens or causes the EU, NATO, the United States to involve themselves directly in the conflict. But they could turn Kyiv into a glass factory tomorrow, and I don't mean with nuclear weapons. Full conventional. We gave them the Patriot system, yes, and I talked to one of the people that trained them on the Patriot system, and I know the capabilities they have, and I know it could be overwhelmed in a couple days. I know that. I don't think that. I know that because, again, I talked to one of the lead people who trained the Ukrainian troops who came to the United States to learn to use that missile defense system, and this person's job is 100% that missile defense system. This person trained other soldiers to use it formally in advanced training as a drill sergeant. There's no way out of this. That can happen. So both sides here in these pseudo-proxy wars, I guess, are using restraint that is prolonging the war. And here's the thing about prolonged wars. What does Sun Tzu tell us about prolonged wars, boys and girls? No nation has ever been... no nation has ever benefited from a protracted war. That's what Sun Tzu said. And Sun Tzu's not wrong, and that's ancient, ancient freaking wisdom. All right, how about the AI bubble? What AI bubble, Jack? You love AI. So in 1999, I loved the internet. In 1999, I said, I wasn't on the air yet, but I said, the internet is the future. I promise you I said it. In 1999, I was actively designing, selling, and building technologies like data centers, networks for corporations, industrial class Ethernet hardware. I was involved with that. Like, I was all in on the internet and everything the internet was bringing us. Some of my customers were doing some of the first DSL rollouts. So that was like Santerra Systems and Alcatel, right? And so... yeah, and I also said, it looks like a bubble. And people think when you say a thing is a bubble, that when the bubble pops, the thing goes away. How many real estate bubbles have you seen in your life if you're 50, 60, 70 years old? A few. How many times have you seen it pop? Every time, okay? By the way, we're in one right now. We're in like the weirdest bubble for real estate ever. We're not going to get into that today. Did real estate go away? No. Did the dot-com bubble pop in 1999, 2000? Uh-huh. Did the internet go away? No. If you go back to like 2002 even, we still had like this list of search engines that was on a piece of paper, and I held it up over my head, it would touch the floor. Search engines like Ask Jeeves and Lycos were doing Super Bowl ads in the late 90s, early 2000s. I don't even know if they probably do still exist, but no one uses them. They're gone. Dustbin of history. How many companies vanished from the face of the earth in the aftermath? How many giant players became little niche players? Why? That's when I say bubble, this is what I am talking about. I am talking about an actual bubble. The bubble is in a piece of the sector. Excuse me, it's not the sector itself. So the internet, like, and see, this is like, you know, this is the boomer thing, right? My boomer father, and he's an older boomer too, born not long after the war. He said, the internet crashed. It's like, Dad, you don't even know what the internet is, right? Like, he's like, AOL's in the tank. Yes, AOL stock crashed. AOL's not, he thought AOL was the internet. And not in the way a lot of other people did, as in AOL is how I get on the internet, so they're the internet service provider, the only one or something. No, he literally thought like AOL was the internet, is the thing. And a lot of people that way, I think right now, are thinking that way about AI. That an AI bubble, for it to pop, what that means is that AI has to be seen by the average person as a failure. In other words, it's not going to do all the things that it's already doing. But, you know, when you have sources like The Atlantic, and I recently saw an article in Fortune about this, you're starting to see these. I'm not saying that there are people you can trust. I'm saying they're mainstream. And when they start talking about something like this, the AI bubble is no ordinary bubble. I have a link to this, and it is a paywall removed link on Archive where you can read everything. And it's a pretty long article. And usually The Atlantic puts out some real garbage. This article's actually pretty good. And their big takeaway from here, if you read all of this, is that people don't realize how much of the current boom in the economy that we have right now. People don't think that's the other thing. Like, because the average person is having a hard time paying their bills and can't, like, and because everybody under 35 is screaming they'll never buy a house, they don't understand we're in a boom. They think we're in a bust. We're not in a bust. Look at the stock market, right? And I know that doesn't pay your bills, but by and large, this is one of the strongest economies that's ever existed. It's on fake legs. But overall, it's one of the strongest economies we've ever had. There's tremendous opportunity right now for employment. They're getting everybody laid off, right? No, it's not AI laying everybody off. It's H-1B visas. Still, if you're good, there's a lot of opportunity right now, especially if you're a man and willing to work in the trades. There's tremendous opportunity right now to make better money, inflation adjusted, than you could have made in that trade in 1999. I don't care if you don't believe me. It doesn't matter. The numbers track. I've done the math, and I've seen that the numbers track. So we have a weird boom. We don't understand the interconnected nature of it, and the average person, probably 50% of the country, thinks we're not in a boom anyway. And that's different than the dot-com boom because the media was so in on the boom. Like, the media doesn't want to talk about a boom right now because if they do, it makes Orange Man look good. So they're muted in the boom. But think about how many things are up, up, up that are not AI because of AI. So think about, like, the price of stock in chip manufacturers, for instance. And that one's pretty obvious that it's linked to AI, but the average person doesn't see it that way. But then who are the chip suppliers buying other things from? And this is like a web that just goes through our entire economy right now, all tied to AI leading the charge at the top. And this cannot go on. This cannot go on. One of the points the article makes is that a lot of these tech companies that have invested billions into AI have a very short window now to make a profit before everything falls apart. For all the talk, you would think that they're building a data center on every city block. Pretty soon, the only thing left, you're going to go outside, it's going to be dry lakes with no water, data centers, and fields of solar panels. That's all there's going to be because people don't understand, like, spatial relationships, maps, how big the effing country is, how much farmland we have, how much farmland we have that we do not need. We have no need of it as farmland. They don't understand any of this. So they believe in this propaganda campaign that everything's going to be a data center. Everything's going to be a data center. Everything's going to be a flock camera. All the flock cameras will go to all the data centers. Data centers don't exist for you and me to use, even though we use it every day. They exist for flock cameras and government surveillance and CBDCs and whatever else they can come up to scare you with. Not that some of those things aren't real. That's just not, it's not, it doesn't all go together that way. So you have all this weirdness going on. But, you know, how long can these companies continue to spend without making money? And you think, oh, well, actually, everybody uses AI, so that's got to be good. If you have the $20 a month account with ChatGPT right now, and you actually use it, ChatGPT loses money. OpenAI loses money. If you have the base account with Google Gemini and you use it, they lose money on you. Every customer they get is more money they lose. And they still have a huge batch of users that are freemium users, right? The people using the free version. Every time you make one prompt and hit enter, and you're watching it where it says thinking, there's GPUs going, and they're spending money in electricity alone. And they do not make enough money to make a profit. None of them are profitable. Now, some of them are at least tied into profitable entities. And that's why, you know, you have like the Microsoft involvement with OpenAI, you have Google, Gemini, so you have giant profitable entities running these data centers and these AIs almost like a nonprofit right now. Without the operating side of the entity, that piece of the entity would not be able to exist. And eventually, this has to have a come to Jesus moment and a consolidation. And so you're going to see, yeah, I would tell you, you probably will see Claude, Gemini, ChatGPT, and Grok survive, and probably not much else. But there's going to be a ton of other niche players that are going to just collapse. And there's going to be a ton of people who are building data centers because they simply believe the demand will be so high, if we have the compute, somebody will pay for it. And we're, for all of me saying they're not building as much as you claim they are building more than we need. They're building more than we need. That's so they can surveil us. They can't make enough money to do that. They don't need as much as you think to do what you say they're doing. They actually already have all the compute they need to do the thing you're afraid of. That does not mean it's okay that they're doing it. That's just reality. This is going to explode, and it is going to be messy, and it's going to catch most people unaware. And this is how the progression looks. And I can't give you a definitive time yet, but you're going to see more and more of the big mainstream media talk about it and say, "Ooh, look at the bubble," and then that news cycle will pass through, and it won't pop. And then everybody will forget about it and go on to bitching about somebody, something else. And then sometime after that, pop. And you will see the stock market crumble when that happens. I'm going to tell you right now, it's going to happen. And when it does, all of you that tell me I'm wrong will be able to do what I did at the beginning of this episode. Say, okay, Jack, I was wrong. Okay. Anyway, moving on. Let's talk about the explosive diarrhea lettuce. Now, this is like one of those moments that we should be learning something, and for some reason people don't like to learn things. I guess that's the only way that I can put it. But what you're going to see the government say is we need more oversight and greater tracking capability and all. And here's the deal. For all the talk about Taco Bell, Taco Bell has nothing directly to do this. And they are not the only place where people went and ate lettuce and got explosive diarrhea. There is one company, and I can't remember their name now, that a single processing plant in Mexico seems to be the source, except the government tested the lettuce from this facility and said it has this bacteria that causes you to shit through the eye of a needle. And by the way, even with treatment, this can last for up to a month. This is bad, right? This is not good. They said that they tested it. Yeah, Taylor Farms, that's it. Thank you, Hey, Alabama. Taylor Farms is the responsible partner. And isn't that neat? Taylor Farms. Sounds like a family-run farm, and that's how they'll market it. But the processing facilities in Mexico and the lettuce come from all over the effing place. They're just a brand on top of it. So they tested this shredded iceberg lettuce, which, you know, the Americanized bacon cheeseburger taco that Taco Bell is famous for, had this lettuce on it. They tested the lettuce. They said, hey, it's got this cryptosporosis or whatever the hell it is. And then they came out after they did massive brand damage, not to Taylor Farms, but to Taco Bell, right? Because that's all the news, like Taco Bell, is that nobody else ate this shit and got explosive diarrhea somewhere else, right? Taco Bell is not the sole source of this. Taylor Farms seems to be. Well, then the governor comes out and goes, yeah, you know, we said we tested that sample and it tested positive. Yeah, we're not really good at testing things and coming up with positives that are real. COVID. It's actually negative. But we still think it came from there. Now, I will tell you why I think they're probably right about where it came from. Because every place that you can track back to this person ate lettuce at this place and then shit through the eye of a needle traces back to this Taylor Farms, but they don't have a positive actual test for the bacteria. Now, this is an interesting thing. That makes actual sense. So let's say that Taylor Farms is really the source of this, and shredded lettuce has this bacteria from Taylor Farms. Okay. And you and I go to the store, and they haven't announced it yet, and there's two bags of shredded lettuce sitting next to each other, right next to each other's shelf. And Firebird Optics, who is here in the live chat, he picks up one bag, and I pick up the other bag. He goes home. He makes a salad or a taco or whatever. He eats it, and poor Firebird Optics, poor Gordon, is on the throne for 30 days of shitting through the eye of a needle. I go home, I eat the lettuce, and I'm perfectly fine. And what some people say, that's because your biology of your stomach is better, and you ate the Klepto, whatever the hell it is, and you didn't get it. Or and maybe, but there's also a very good chance that this bacteria was present and had had time to reproduce at a higher level in the bag that he bought than I did. And you could test his bag, and it would be positive in my bag, and it would be negative. That is totally not only possible, but probable. You don't get a uniform infection of something like that across something as varied as shredded heads of lettuce. Now, you will get a higher percentage of the final product because since it's shredded, we're actually driving it into the lettuce when we're shredding it mechanically, and we're amalgamating and mixing it. So instead of you bought a head of lettuce that may or may not be infected, you bought a bag that has pieces of maybe 100 heads of lettuce in it. That's a problem, too. They won't tell you that. But the lessons here are the government's incompetent. That's number one. The government, they passed the Food Safety and Modernization Act all the way back in like 2012 or something. I remember I covered it. This is when Alex Jones was on the radio spilling his bullshit. Oh, they're going to ban trading tomatoes with your neighbor. They're going to ban saving seeds. That's what this does. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. And a lot of you wrote me and told me, you're a shill for the government and stupid shit. And it came and it went. And I said all the problems that were with it. And then those other problems never came, but these problems are here. But the whole point of spending all this money, combining power and creating new powers, creating this huge burden of paperwork on small farms as well, because the exemption was up to $500,000. And $500,000 farm is pretty small. A million dollar in total revenue is pretty small as farms go. Yeah. Wouldn't be effective. And it's not. The whole purpose of that was so when this happens again, because they know that it will, we'll be able to figure out right away where it came from and shut it down and protect, and they haven't been able to do it. They can't get anything right. So the government is incompetent. That's another lesson there. Food poisoning almost always comes from big food. For all the talk about the danger of backyard eggs and all this shit, it is almost inevitably the case that every time we have a story about people getting E. coli or explosive diarrhea or whatever else it is, it is almost always the case that it is big food. It is some giant conglomerate that's causing this to happen, and it causes a widespread, hard-to-shut-down situation. If Bill's farm down the road has infected food and we trace it back to Bill's farm, it's real quick to shut it down and say we have a – like it happens, right? This can happen. It's not always that somebody did something bad or malicious or even incompetent. Sometimes things just happen. But when you have small regional distribution of food, it's very easy to figure it out. And it's very easy to put a stop to it and then figure out what went wrong and then correct it. Because no farmer wants to poison their customers. But when you have these giant conglomerates, and by the time you figure it out, you have this lettuce in 20 states, good luck. But no, because of the Food Safety and Modern Net bullshit, government is incompetent. And food poisoning almost always comes from big food. Growing your own and buying local is your best bet if you don't want to get sick. That's something else. You'll never hear them say it. You know, but I've never gotten sick off vegetables from my garden. I've never gotten sick off vegetables from a farmer's market. Never. And I really don't know anybody that did. It's almost always big food, right? So grow local or buy local. And then here's another thing that, like, they'll never say this, but you know what? No one ever gets explosive diarrhea from eating a ribeye. or a sirloin or a pork chop. You know, if you're less into eating raw leaves, you have a much lower potential to end up with foodborne illness. Now, I know if it's, well, what about salmonella in chicken? That means you undercooked it. You don't eat raw chicken. Okay? Or usually, actually, chicken, when you get some sort of food contamination with chicken, usually it's improper handling, and it's the way it's put, like, let's say, uncooked in the refrigerator, and it's cross-contamination, and that usually happens with vegetables because they're cooked at lower temperatures or they're consumed raw. You just not do that and you'll be okay. Now, let's talk about something I'm going to be doing a full show on in the future. But we haven't really talked about a lot of solutions today, have we? And you guys know me. I'm a solutions person. I like to talk about solutions. And I'm just going to say I only have one person starred for a question or comment. So if you have any, last call, get them in. And the one person I have starred is Survivalizer. So if you're not him and you asked a question, ask it again. But here's your six pillars of liberty. And I think you're going to need these going forward in the clown show because it's only going to get worse. It's going to get so much worse. The Democrats are electing pure on communists right now. And let me tell you something about what that means. All of a sudden, the left-wing lunatics that you thought were left-wing lunatics for the last 20 years of your life, they're going to sound pretty good. The whole thing might be a conspiracy theory, by the way. So the way that you get more Nancy Pelosi's and Chuck Schumer's is you hold up the commies, and then the centrist Democrat starts to look like they make more sense, and then people will listen to them that normally wouldn't have. That's just a little conspiracy theory I have right there. But either way, we are clearly marching headlong into tyranny, one way or another. The government has gotten nothing but bigger over the years. I've been doing the show 18 years. The government's bigger than it was when I started. And it was a problem then. So there's no reason to think this is going to reverse course, is there? So then you have to look at your life and say, where are the things that I actually control that relate to liberty in my own life? Does that make sense? Because we're going to go vote harder. Is it going to, you want to go vote harder, go vote harder. I myself can make a case for some political activism, okay? I'm not big on it, but I can make a case for it. I can understand where you're coming from. But you're not, in the macro, you're not going to reverse the streams. Like, for all the good that Orange Man has done, look how much terrible he has done. I can say that about every president, but with him it's magnified because some of the stuff he's done, I really, really agree with. And a lot of the other shit, you're like, bro, if I was a true believer, I never was, but if I was a true believer in the Republican Party and if we just get the right people in, like the perfect meme would be like, you know, like someone like a Thomas Massey or a Ron Paul is Obi-Wan and Orange Man is Anakin and you were supposed to be the chosen one, right? Like I'm not going to go there because I don't believe that, but I can see how people on the right that fully bought into this feel that way. Like, no new wars. I'm going to blow fucking everything up the minute he's in power. Like, it's crazy. But you don't control that. And what do you think you're going to do? What are you going to do? You're going to elect one of the retards off the left bench in the next election, right? Not this one, but the next election, right? Or you're going to elect J.D. Vance. Guess what? Those are going to be your choices. It's either going to be Vance and a left-wing retard, or it's going to be Marco Rubio and a left-wing retard. And it's not going to be anybody else off the right. And anything you say to the – you're just – unless something – some sort of corruption scandal hits that nukes both of those guys, which is probably not going to. They're smarter than that. And Rubio is a swamp creature, right? He's a swamp creature. This is a guy that, you know, everybody Trump nominated, giant hearings, fights, the world will end. He nominates Rubio for Secretary of State. 99 senators vote to confirm immediately. So that tells you what you're dealing with there. And I know a guy that knows Marco really well, or at least he did. I know a guy that helped Marco get his start in politics. And I mean money, resources, networking, like hung out with him, sat down with him every year that he was in office for a meeting like that. And he said, your assessment of him becoming a swamp creature is exactly correct. Some of you that come to my workshops, you know them too. You might even have been here when we had the conversation. And you see, in the survival, I said, Rubio is still probably better than Cruz or Mike Lee. Yeah, so what? Better? I don't think you mean better. I think you mean less bad, right? So my point is we're not going to fix this with a ballot, right? The best you can hope for with electing certain people is slowing down the decline. That's it. That's all you're doing is forestalling the eventual inevitable. So how do we build liberty in our life under the things that we control versus the thing we bitch about and that we vote for? Number one, the first pillar is physical health. And I want to say something here that you're going to have to understand. These are not binary, right? I've used that term a bunch in this episode. In other words, I'm perfectly healthy. I'm very sick. It's not like that. These are all degrees. And so you need, for whatever is possible for you, optimal physical health, which means you may have been born with a condition that prohibits you from ever being as healthy as somebody that's, you know, running marathons or something like that. But you need to have the best physical health that is possible for you that you can possibly have. And without that, you are subject to control at a much higher level than somebody that isn't. When they start dangling like government healthcare and shit, there's a point where anybody's like, fuck, there's no other way I can. I know it's not as good, but it's something, and I'll take something over nothing. The more healthy you are, the less you will capitulate to what they want. Number two, you need to have some level of autonomous income. What is autonomous income? I have autonomous income. Any one of you can get pissed off at me today and rage quit and cancel your membership, and I will still make my mortgage payment. Period. All right. I can have a sponsor that's been with me for 15 years decide I don't like you anymore and quit. I'm still going to make because my income is so diverse, I'm still going to be able to pay my bills. Now, could I destroy myself if I just tried? Yeah, but that's on me. And so that makes it autonomous. It's under my control. No matter how well liked you are at work, if you are employed, unless you are a majority shareholder principal in the company you're employed by, you do not have autonomous income. Now, you have various levels of autonomy in your income. In other words, some people in a company, if that company comes on hard times and does layoffs, you're first, right? You're gone. And then some people, like, as long as the lights get turned on, you're probably still there. But with all the technological flux we have right now, that can change too. So again, autonomous income isn't a binary situation, fully autonomous, not, because even a person like me still has somebody they have to be accountable to. But how autonomous is your income? How at risk is your income in an economic downturn? You know, in the business I'm in, actually economic downturns are good for my income. More people look to resources like Survival Podcast in an economic downturn than when everything's super, right? So some form of a business that you own and operate and control, or side hustle, or other forms of income. There's people that, like, they don't really think of themselves as an entrepreneur, but they own 10 rental properties. That's a very autonomous form of income. Even if you had to sell off two of your properties to rebalance, you still have income, you still have cash flow, you still have equity that you can borrow against, you have options. So you want some form of autonomous income in your life. And again, I want you to think of these like a 6-channel equalizer on a soundboard. And each of those can go up. And sometimes if you push one all the way up, another one has to come down or you squelch out. Think about it that way. And it'll make more sense as we keep going. And then you want autonomous wealth. What is autonomous wealth? It's value that you hold in control and can transfer that the government can't easily take from you. And obviously, my number one recommendation there is Bitcoin. They can seize Bitcoin. I don't care what the retarded person in a suit said on Fox News or CNN. No, they can't. Well, they stopped the transaction of crypto going to Iran. Okay. My head hurts when I have to explain this. That's because the retards that they took the money from were using exchange accounts. They seized the account, not the so-called crypto. And I said Bitcoin. I didn't say crypto. You want to use those words interchangeably, you go ahead. I'll ignore you. I don't use those words interchangeably. I said Bitcoin. One thing, done, the end. And when I say that, I'm talking about having full self-custody. I'm talking about having something like a hardware wallet that air-gapped, and good luck picking the right atom from the known universe. You are not going to do that. So that's what I mean. What are other forms? And again, you have to look, how far up are you pushing that channel on the EQ board? Gold and silver would be other forms of autonomous wealth. To a lesser degree, that real estate we talked about earlier. Because that can't, you can be sued. Somebody, it's complicated though. It's not like a bank account. A bank account, literally some bureaucrat somewhere can go click and have your bank accounts locked. Your stocks, your equities, your Bitcoin ETF, your 401k, all of it has varying degrees of capital controls that can be applied to it if you're singled out as an individual or if the thing itself is targeted. And a lot of capital controls that you think that can't happen here, if it's happened in Argentina, right, or it happened in Venezuela, it can happen here too. And right about the time somebody says it can't happen here is right about the time it's about to happen here. I'm just saying, that's history has shown that pattern. So you should have something that you control. A suitcase full of $20 bills. If you had $200,000 in cash in a safe in your house, it is very autonomous wealth. It would take completely eliminating cash, which has been a goal for 50 years. Okay. It has been a goal for 50 years. However, it's also been a goal for 50 years without it happening. That shows you that it's difficult. We are a lot closer to it than we used to be. It amazes me when I hear people like, I just did an interview with Billy Bond, and one of the people in the comments says, the fact that he likes Bitcoin is very concerning. It's designed to make us comfortable with digital money so they can get rid of cash. I'm like, I bet you pay your freaking mortgage with a direct bank application, like you go online, you do electronic bill pay, or you write a check, which is digital money, and very few people write checks anymore, or you use a debit card or something like that. Most spending is electronic already. It's an asinine thing. Like, because it's digital, that means that it will get you used. You want to get people used to spending digital money, put a freaking debit card in everybody's hand and give everybody online banking. 95% of the M3 money supply isn't in cash. We're already 95% digital, and we have been for 25 years. It's nonsense. But the problem with the cash isn't that tomorrow they're going to make cash illegal. The problem with the cash is it's a melting ice cube. Like, if you hold Bitcoin for 10 years, I have no doubt you're going to be fine. Now, will it go down between now and November? I do think it will. Short term, absolutely. But across 10 years, I can't guarantee it, but I'd say the highest probability is a significant increase in value. I can also guarantee you, if you hold $200,000 in cash in a safe in your floor for 20 years, its value will decline, and drastically so, by at least 50% over 10 years. I'm going to tell you that's what's going to happen in the next 10. But even 25% sucks. That means you thought you had $200,000 worth of purchasing power, and now you have $150,000 worth of purchasing power. And then cash has some issues. If you want to go buy groceries, it's fine for now. Even when you don't get rid of it at the corporate level or the company level, or the country level, it doesn't stop, you know, Publix or Albertsons or Kroger from saying, we no longer accept cash at this location. It's too much of a headache. And I know you always think that's a conspiracy theory, but if I'm running a grocery store, cash is a pain in the ass. It would be much easier as a manager, especially the financial side management, if no cash ever came into my store ever. It would just be easier, and people move toward easy. So you still run the risk of difficulty of spending. And then when you want to buy a car, like when you start throwing around significant amounts of cash, it causes all kinds of problems for the person holding the cash too. So I'm not saying it's bad, and I'm all for having a significant stockpile of cash because there's certain places where that is the best form of currency to have your hands on. But long-term holding it is a guaranteed loss, and in large amounts, it becomes cumbersome and difficult to move and difficult to spend without setting off alarms. And if you're in a place where these capital controls are coming in the case, in a place, that's even more the case. So a true autonomous wealth. To me, the fact that I can get on an airplane, all I need is a passport, and I can get off a plane in Tokyo, I don't even have to take my, you know, Bitcoin wallet with me. So it can't be, and if you're seized, good luck, right? You can't be seized. And I can have 12, 16 words in my head, and my money's wherever I am all the time. That's autonomous wealth. And the fact that if I need to pay you for something and you're across the country or the world, I can do it in seconds. I can move it at the speed of light. That's why it's my primary rate. But one way or another, you need to be pushing up the channel for autonomous wealth. You need geographic autonomy. And geographic autonomy is where we start to realize that doing certain things reduces other things. And what I mean by that is, technically, I have incredible geographic autonomy. Honestly, if they build that moon base, if there's a DSL connection up there, I might have to stop doing interviews because of latency of like, what, eight seconds or something. But I could run a podcast from the moon. I run my business from the moon. There's no place on Earth that has an internet connection and electricity that I can't run my show from. So I have autonomous wealth and I have incredible geographic autonomy. But I remember I said about physical health. The number one thing that affects your physical health is the food you eat. So one of the ways that we address that is by becoming homesteaders and raising meat and eggs and stuff like that. Well, as soon as you involve animals, you reduce your geographic autonomy. Now, if you have to run because they're after you or something, I understand you might just be like, call your neighbor. Hey, bro, you just inherited all my animals. Good luck. Dump the food on the ground and haul ass. But when it comes to like just day-to-day operations, it would be a lot easier for us to travel if I didn't have fish, crayfish, aquatic systems, and ducks, and even dogs. At least dogs are a lot more geographically transportable. But like if you need to go to another country, you know, the hell that my niece and her husband just went through, he's being transferred to Tokyo out of Florida. He's in the Air Force. And even with the military support, they went through hell to be able to take their dog, right? So as we build up certain things, other things suffer, but you definitely want to have geographic autonomy. And the number one and two things that do that are autonomous wealth and autonomous income. They make you portable. They would make you movable, yeah? And then you have to have mental sovereignty. And by mental sovereignty, I mean what I've talked about for so many years. You have to have the ability that when somebody just throws some bullshit at you, you just immediately say, maybe, but probably not. And then your instinct needs to be to immediately determine the facts, including the first question, does this really matter to me? If you're chasing things that don't really affect your life, you do not have mental sovereignty. In fact, that is the number one way to control people. Right? You know this SAVE Act bullshit? They're not going to pass it. It's never going to get done. They're talking about it so you don't pay attention to what's going on in the friggin' Middle East. They're not going to do it. The Republicans could do this tomorrow if they wanted to. They don't want to. They don't want to. It's a distraction. So you can write your senator or congressman, and I know that takes a couple seconds. If you do it once and go on with your life, fine. But so many people are chasing so many things down that don't matter. So first thing, does it matter? If it doesn't, it's off my radar. I don't care anymore. I'm not taking a side. An example right now would be the whole thing with the BIP 110 in Bitcoin. I already know it's fake and gay, so I don't care. Right? The people that are loudest about it don't even run nodes, and the ones that do don't run nodes that do anything. So they can make all the noise they want. In the end, nothing's going to happen. And if it does, that's how consensus works. And Bitcoin will be fine either way. So I don't care anymore. I'm not going to start yelling at my fellow Bitcoiners, right? You got half the side saying you're a bunch of retards, and you got the other half saying you're for child porn. I won't even get into how they're making that leap. But since it's not going to matter in the end, I'm not in the debate. I don't care. Monkeys throwing shit at each other. How do you not get shit on you? Don't get on one side or the other and start throwing shit. And the last thing to do is get in the middle, because then you get shit from everybody. Right? So doesn't matter, I'm out. That's mental sovereignty. The next part of that, though, is it does affect me. I do care. Find the truth. Develop mitigation for it. That's it. That's all you can do. You're not going to change it. You're not going to change it. Oh, run for office myself. Good luck, bro. I'll even have you on to talk about it. But we all know the truth about the long-term trend. So mental sovereignty is the ability to quickly diagnose, does this apply to me? And if it does, what do I do to mitigate it? And then go forward with your life. If you can't do that, you're under control. That one, you need to push that channel all the way to the top as quickly as you can. It takes time and effort. You say it is easy. Doing it's hard. And then the last one is skill proficiency. And when I do the show on this, this might be like 8 pillars or 10 pillars, because we might break some of these into some other components. Because skill proficiency is things like being able to change oil in a car, to change a part on a car, to do a home improvement project. But it's also like it's technical. Being able to write code is a skill proficiency. Being able to use AI effectively is a skill proficiency. Being able to develop a marketing plan for a business is a skill proficiency. And so that's one of those things that no one will ever have like 100% skill proficiency. That would mean that literally anything that needs doing, you can do. And even if you did, by some miracle, like if you were Neo from the Matrix, they could plug a cable in your brain and give you the ability, you still don't have the time. So skill proficiency is about having a broad enough and valuable enough proficiency and enough skills that you are adaptable to fluxes in society. So real quick, going back through them: physical health, autonomous income, autonomous wealth, geographic autonomy, mental sovereignty, and skill proficiency. If you don't have those things to at least some degree, all six of them to some degree, your life's going to be harder in the next 5 to 10 years than you probably can imagine or admit right now. And that doesn't mean you have to have, again, a perfect score in all of them, because nobody does. And some of them will hurt more than others, depending on where you are in life. If you have extensively high-level physical health, significant autonomous income, and significant autonomous wealth, then you also have significant geographic autonomy. As long as you have a semblance of mental sovereignty at that point, you can almost have no real skills except the ones you need to keep your income running. You do not have to know how to change oil, right? You don't. If you're 80 and you have plenty of money and you can live on $300,000 a year until you're 100 years old without running out of money, a lot of this you can forget about, except maybe the physical health thing, so that you have the quality of life while you're living in your last days. You certainly don't need to worry. If you're 80, you don't need to worry dog shit about how to use AI. You might want to. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. I'm saying you don't need it. You're done with your working life, unless you're one of those rare people that are like still a hard-charging entrepreneur at 80. And some people are. But it's the bell curve, and you're out there. What about this one? Yeah. So what you need to do when you look at those six things is go, where am I weakest that I need to improve? And where am I strongest, and what does that compensate for? And what could I most easily improve in the short term, like over the next 12 months, and work on that? Because these are going to be the areas. This is going to be the difference. I don't know if you've seen the meme, but there's this meme. It gets used in the Bitcoin space and a lot of other places. And it's two people on a train. And the one person, and there's only two people. There's plenty of empty seats. And the one person is sitting, let's say, on the right side of the train, and out the right window is a cliff. And I don't mean like looking off the cliff. I mean like you're looking at the cliff. Like it's like a wall. It's like 5 feet from the window. It's just rock. And there's nothing to see. And that person's looking out the window and they're sad and they're miserable. Then there's a person on the left side and they're looking out at this gloriously beautiful valley, right? There's mountains. There's a creek. There's trees. There's birds. It's beautiful. And they have a giant smile. The two people are sitting, you know, 6 feet apart. And the person on the right side, the only thing they have to do is change their perspective. They really don't even have to get out of the seat. They could just turn their head And if they did that, they would get a complete different view. But they could also, because of the way the artist did the cartoon, just switch seats. This is switching seats. It's just not as easy. But it's absolutely required, and you can either look at bleakness, darkness, dankness, misery, and a lack of hope, or beauty and opportunity, even if things go to shit. In other words, you literally can live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. We've only been saying it for 18 years. I didn't make it up because it was a great tagline. I made it up because it was the most accurate description of what I was trying to teach since 2008. I'm still trying to teach you today. With that, let's go ahead and wrap things up. Let me remind you again real quick as we do that, that you can get a copy of my newest book, Laws of Life, Book 2, Now Build the System for Your Life. We hit a bunch of bestsellers list on Amazon. We're not like the top 10 on Amazon. We're still doing really, really well. We're still moving, you know, somewhere between 5 to 20 books a day right now. So that's really great after being a month into it. This is a book that will make a great gift to the young people in your life, the people that need to hear the kind of thing that I was talking about today. So if you haven't gotten a copy, get a copy. And if you have gotten a copy, please consider getting a copy for a friend or a family member or something like that. And I am in my last pass on the first book's workbook, book one's workbook right now. Tom is actively building the course at jackslaws.com. That should be out, you know, by August. I thought we would have the second books out by August. It'll probably be more like September though. And I am still actively working on my next book, which is Me, Myself, and AI, but more about that in the future. Next up today, let's talk about the item of the day. Remember, you can always help us out by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. It just so happened today when I checked my pricing alerts that this item is on sale again for 40% off for $29. These are the Anchor Soundcore V20i open ear headphones. I love these. These are my favorite earphones. And I'm going to tell you something about me. I'm big on buying the best, right? I like to buy the best. But I'm also big on utility. And I bet you think that what I'm going to say about utility is you can only hear so good anyway, and they sound just as good as like a $300 pair of Beats or something. That's not what I mean by utility here. These actually, for me, and I usually listen to audiobooks and podcasts. I very seldom I'm using earpieces for music, sometimes, but rarely. I can't tell the difference. So that utility does match, but it's not what I'm really saying here. I would have no problem going out and spending $150 on a really great set of Bluetooth earphones if I wasn't me. What the hell does Jack mean by that? I lose shit. If I lose this, I'm out $29. Okay, I am going to lose these. In fact, do you know why I even have this particular set of them? Because the last ones I had, I lost the freaking case, and the case is how they charge. And the ones I had before that, I still have the case, right? Actually, the ones I had after that, I still have the case. But if I open it up and I show it to you, there's only two of them in there. Now, there's only one of them in there. Now, this one, I have both of them. This is my latest. This is my third set of these. They've never broken on me. But I've either lost the case or lost one of the earphones or whatever. And there's no excuse for it. I just ADD disappear shit. I'm sorry. Nicole Sauce just recently sent me this little video about people like me. And it was some dude with this huge hair. And he was making something to eat. And he had an onion in his hand. And he like turns around and sets the onion down. And he goes back to start cutting the onion up. And he's just like, it's gone. And my text back to her was, it was very rude of people to Photoshop my hair that way. Because that's exactly how I am. So I lose stuff. So, and I bet you some of you are like that too, especially small little things. I just don't want that every time I misplace this, I've misplaced $100 or $200 bills. So I like inexpensive. Now, what do I like about them from the other way that I lose them? The other way that I lose them is I'm outside. I'm cutting the grass. I'm working in the garden. I'm doing work on an aquaponic system. I'm sweating my ass off. It's Texas. I'm leaning over, adjusting a valve, and then bloop. Into the pond it goes. It's waterproof. It doesn't matter. I'll never find it. Into the 6-inch deep grass it goes. It doesn't matter. I'll find it when I run it over with the lawnmower. Or I set it down somewhere and it's gone or whatever. But it's generally that it falls out of my ear. these have a little loop. And the little loop holds it on your head so it doesn't fall out. So that's why I'm a fan of these. That may not apply to anybody, but if it applies to you, these are a great deal. And again, they are 40% off today, bringing them in at a $29 price tag. That sale happens a lot, and when it does, I bring them around. And you know what else I do when they go on sale? I buy an extra set of them so that when I lose the set, I can't do that with $200 beads. I'm sorry, and I'm not gonna. So it's up to you what you use, but I will say this about Anker in general, okay? Anker in general is the best value brand of electronics I've ever used, especially with audio stuff. Audio and power backup. I also like E-Tech City for some things, like the thermal guns and whatever. But when it comes to things like this or Bluetooth speakers or battery backups, Anker is the brand. Those guys do it right every time. Let's, before I go away, we'll hit on a couple real quick questions here. Survivalizer says, do you think the flock camera situation is a nothing burger, the next Boston Tea Party or something in between? I don't know if it'll be a Boston Tea Party. I think there's a lot of people trying to make it one. And a Sawzall goes right through that poll really well. There's also a lot of stuff going around that's just not true. Because I looked into it. Because I thought, wouldn't that be neat? Wouldn't that be neat? So you know where that's from, right? That's kind of neat, right? You can tell it's a flock camera because of how it is, right? you either get that or you probably never will. But there's this thing going around. And I'm not like wink, wink, nod, nod here. That if you go get like a standard laser pointer, like the ones you can buy for $10 on Amazon, and you shine it into the sensor of a flock camera, it will disable it. Does not seem to be true. Oh, if it were, it'd be so great. But it doesn't seem to be true. They don't seem to have enough power, and it would have to be precisely aligned and for a long duration for it to work. And the whole time you're doing it, you're probably being filmed because you got to kind of get it straight on, especially with those low power cheap lasers. Now, I'm going to say something you can take any way you want, but it turns out some people make laser pointers out of like DVD readers. Apparently, they're pretty strong and they can jack some shit up, but I don't really know how to do it. But apparently, that's a thing. But I do think people are pissed about them. And every time they tell us, it actually only helps us find missing children and stop bank robbers and stuff like you see on TV, right? And you know, we're not – like every week or two, it comes out like some cop is using them to track his ex-girlfriend or some shit. And like, you know the thing they said didn't happen? Yeah, it happened again, right? So there's a lot of awareness, and then there is – it's a surveillance device. Let's be honest. That's what it is. It is mass surveillance. Data centers aren't mass surveillance. Flock cameras are. So there's a lot of animosity there. But does the average person care enough to have a real impact? I want you to think about Elon rage, right? When Orange Man first got elected and all the blue hairs were angry and they were setting Tesla dealerships on fire and things like that. They never even got close to really slowing down what Tesla was all about. And eventually it all petered out, right? A few people went to jail and it petered out. And they were in a full-on rage. I don't think you get that over flock cameras. Not that it's a hell of a better place to put your rage, in my opinion. But I just don't think you get enough to really stop it that way. Now, if you really want it to happen, it could. Like, if enough people decided, like, it's all going to go down, like, you could have a mass camera elimination day. But they're just going to put them right back up. One of the things I found interesting recently is someone damaged one of these cameras. The police came out and wrote it up, but nobody knew who owned the – like the city's like, it's not ours. The neighborhood association's like, it's not – like no one wanted to take – so they actually had a hard time prosecuting a person because there was no injured party. Nobody's like, oh, that's ours, which also makes you wonder if they all are what you think they are. Or if maybe they are a level of mass surveillance by some alphabet agency or a – what is a non-alphabet agency? That's a group that exists in the government that doesn't have a name. They don't even – like it could be CIA, NSA, but it's some piece or part of it that's autonomous to a degree. Because it seems kind of weird, doesn't it? Doesn't it? That no one's like, hey, that's our camera that these people messed up. Like No one made a phone call to fix it. No one reported it, except like people driving by going, hey, there's a thing. Weird. Weird, isn't it? Yeah. Don't think I don't have some conspiracy theory in me, because that's plausible and makes sense, right? But I don't think it's a Boston Tea Party movement. Now, I did see somebody recently float this idea on X, but I don't think they realized what they were floating. They were just trying to get discussion going. So they said, and you know, their followers are very kind of either right wing, true libertarian, liberty oriented anyway, right? And they said, I don't think we'll ever get everybody deported from this country without flock cameras. What if we could buddy flip the left? Like, I think if you want a Boston Tea Party moment here, like, the left is totally willing to break shit, smash shit, and damage shit. What if the left became convinced that actually, the real purpose of flock cameras is mass deportation? See, the left will rail against mass surveillance as long as Orange Man's around, but they really don't care. They want mass surveillance. The left has never met a government power it wasn't in love with, right? They get really upset when journalists are silenced, only when their journalists are silenced, right? Only when it's an Orange Man type character doing it. Because so the Orange Man pulls a press credential for the White House press corps, which he has every right to do, by the way, whether you like it or not. That's not impinging freedom of press at all. I don't have to let you have access to me for you to have freedom of the press. I'm sorry. It doesn't work that way. I don't have to let you interview me. Like, people say, here's another, it's a similar example. I was on Facebook and I said, anybody that loses their shit over this, I'm just going to get rid of you and block you. Like, I thought you were against censorship. So me not wanting to read your shit is censorship? No, you have freedom to go tell anybody you want. So they freak out about freedom of the press with something like that. But when you completely deplatform actual journalists and private citizens both, or limit their reach on a social media platform, that they're okay with. So the left can be motivated to do certain things that are very destructive. And I'm just saying that maybe somebody bigger than me, a little more power than I have, might be able to convince them, actually, the flock cameras, the people that really have them, it's ICE. What if we started calling them ICE flock cameras? Just a random thought, all right? And then I just wanted to real quick thank Gordon here, Firebird Optics, for a $100 super chat. Thank you, sir. I really appreciate that. I got to meet him up in Tennessee, and I still owe you a fishing trip along with some other folks. I haven't forgotten about that, bro. I promise you. Anyway, with that, thank you for everybody who tuned in today. Went longer than I planned, but I guess with three shows a week, you know, that's one thing we could do is longer episodes. Take care. Tune in tomorrow. I have an interview for you tomorrow, and it was in my head 5 minutes ago who it was and what it's about, but it disappeared. The show went too long, but it'll be good, and we'll have a live stream tomorrow at noon Central Standard Time. As long as Central Standard Time is still a thing, right? It might just be time sometime in the future, as we talked about today. And then we will have an expert panel show on Thursday, and next week we'll do it all again. We are on a regularly scheduled program going forward for quite a long time.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.